Hello everyone. Today we are learning the 15th chapter of Sifr Shmuel. It's pretty astounding how quickly things have gone for the worse for David HaMelech. Yesterday's chapter ended with David kissing his son Avshalom as a sign of their reconciliation after Avshalom had been in a somewhat self-imposed exile in Geshur. In today's chapter we open with Avshalom standing outside the city gates. David's son would stand by the road, it appears, on the way to the court or the house of judgment, and then he would see someone approaching, and he would ask them where they're from. Then he would tell them, "Re devrecha tovim unachachim v'shomea ein lecha me'ata melech." It is clear that your claim is right and just, but there's no one assigned to you by the king to hear it. Furthermore, "Ve'yomer Avshalom, mi yashmeni shofet ba'aretz ve'ala ya'avo kol ish asher yeh lo riv u'mishpat ve'yitzadik tav." And Avshalom would say, "If only I were appointed a judge in the land and everyone with a legal dispute came before me, I would see that he got his rights." Odd. We may remember in chapter 8, it was David who ruled with tzadik ve'mishpat, with righteousness and justice. Then, if a man tried to bow down to Avshalom, the king's son would instead grasp them and kiss them. Abarbanel writes that Avshalom turned himself into a man of the people. A person could look at Avshalom and see him as one of their own. With this, the chapter says Avshalom stole the hearts of the people. After some time, Avshalom asks King David that he be allowed to go to Hebron under the guise that he must fulfill a vow, and David grants him permission. Commentators point out that the people of Hebron were still somewhat upset after David HaMelech had moved his royal seat from Hebron to Yerushalayim. Avshalom plans to be crowned king in Hebron, and he sent agents to each of the tribes in Israel to blow a shofar upon his crowning. Avshalom brings 200 men with him, v'lo yadu kol hadavar, who did not know the whole matter. Achitophel, David's counselor, also goes with Avshalom, and the conspiracy is just gaining in strength. The entire time, it's a bit unclear why Avshalom is inciting this coup to begin with, but David doesn't appear to be shocked. As soon as David gets word of what Avshalom is planning, he gathers everyone in order to flee. Rav Amnon Bazak sees here that David appears to have learned from a previous mistake. In chapter 22 of the first book of Shmuel, David is fleeing from Shaul, and he deceives Achimelech the Kohen in the city of Nov to give David bread. David tells Achimelech that he's sent on a mission on behalf of King Shaul. Yet when King Shaul later arrives and finds out that the city of Nov aided David, he has Doega Edomi put the entire city to slaughter. So this time around, when fleeing from Avshalom, at least in Rav Bazak's view, David is taking no chances. In addition, the strangers or foreigners living in Yerushalayim join David in fleeing from the city. The Haritim, the Peltim, and the Gitim are marching out one by one. Tzadok and Evitar, the Kohanim, are bringing the ark, and they plan to join, but David tells them to turn back. He says they can essentially be his eyes and ears in Yerushalayim. The scene during this exodus from Yerushalayim is tragic. We read that the entire valley is weeping. David is walking up Har Zeitim, the Mount of Olives, barefoot with his head covered. Radak writes that David cried at the thought that he may never again see Yerushalayim. At the top of the hill, David HaMelech meets Hushai Archi, another non-Jewish ally to David. Hushai wants to join David, but the king instead requests that Hushai go back to Yerushalayim and serve as an aide to Avshalom, influencing him on David's behalf. David HaMelech has essentially set up his own counterintelligence in Yerushalayim to spy on Avshalom while in exile. What does this whole story resemble? What other rebellion in Tanakh does it remind us of? It was just a few weeks ago we read Parshat Korach, where Korach the Levite was inciting a populist rebellion against Moshe. Korach takes the other Levim, the firstborns, the leaders of each tribe, who are all disgruntled in what they perceive as a second-class status to the Kohanim. Then Korach takes issue individually with Moshe and Aaron. Umadua titnasu al kahal Hashem. Why do you raise yourselves above God's people? Korach has gathered together 250 men, leaders among Israel. Rav Alex Israel provides a lengthy explanation of the Midrashim surrounding Korach that I'll only touch here very briefly. We see in Midrash Tanchuma, Midrash Te'ilim, Korach uses a similar tactic to Avshalom in the manner in which he's approaching these leaders in Israel. He spoke to them personally, intimately. He told them stories mocking the mitzvot of Moshe and Aaron, including the story of a single mother with two orphan daughters. She owned a single field, yet Moshe told her, "Do not plow with an ox and an ass together. Do not sow the field with mixtures of seeds." She starts to harvest, and Moshe says, "Leave the gleanings in the edge of your field for the poor." She gathers the harvest, and Moshe says, "Give the tithes to the poor, the priest and the Levite." So on and so on. Korach blames this on Moshe and Aaron. She stood there crying with her two daughters. That is what they did to this desperate woman. That is what they do, and they pin it all on the word of Hashem. This approach that the Midrash describes is almost ludicrous, if you consider that what Korach is really after. He wants the Kohanut, the priesthood. Similarly, Avshalom takes the grievance of each person coming to the court in Yerushalayim, tells each person that their claim is just, and promises them that if I, Avshalom, were to be a judge, then each person would have their rights. But the problem is that Avshalom does not simply want to be a judge. He goes to Hebron to crown himself a king. That's the danger of populism. The emotions of the collective are real. The entire Kehillah should be considered holy, as Korach said. Each person should have their legal claim heard, just as Avshalom said. Yet the populist leader often has little care for the collective. They exploit the emotions of the collective as far as it benefits themselves. They twist the will of others so that it aligns with their own will, regardless of whether it's in the best interest of the larger public. There's another sequel in Tanakh contained in today's chapter that I'd like to touch on, one that Rav Bazak speaks to. During the flight from Yerushalayim, David is watching the communities of foreigners leaving the city, and he says to Ittai HaGeti, "Why should you go with us? You're a foreigner, an exile. Stay in the city. You only came yesterday. Should you really go with me to wherever I will go? Take your brothers back with you." And Ittai responds, "Chai Hashem v'chai Adoni HaMelech, ki im b'makom asher yeh esham. Adoni HaMelech, im lemavet, im lechayim, kishem yehi avdecha. As the Lord lives, and as my Lord the King lives, wherever my Lord the King may be, there your servant will be, whether for death or for life." We may remember a similar story that we learned in 1999, not too long ago. No, we haven't learned it yet. It'll come later, sorry. But we did learn it over Shavuot. And that's after her sons have died. Naomi tells her Moabite daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah, that they should return to Moab, while Naomi will return to Israel. Ruth rejects Naomi's offer. She insists, "Ki el asher telchi alecha, v'asher talini alin, amcha imi, amecha ami, ve'alecha Elohai. That wherever you go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people. Your God is my God." We then read at the end of Megillat Rut that David descends from Rut. Rav Bazak writes that her grandson merited that at a time that he found himself in distress, like fleeing from Avshalom, he too was aided by a foreigner. David's care in watching each of the communities of foreigners leaving Yerushalayim is pretty fascinating, as well as his personal relationship with Ushaya Archi, who wanted to leave with David as he was fleeing on Har Zeitim. As king of Israel, why does David take such interest in peoples who one could say are not part of his natural constituency? One could hardly say he stands to benefit politically among Am Yisrael for going to such lengths to care for foreigners. But that's exactly it. David is the foil to Avshalom's populism. Besides fulfilling the mitzvah of loving the stranger, la'avtam et ha'ger, ki gerem ha'itam be'eretz Mitzrayim, David is taking steps to ensure the safety of all those who fall under his leadership, even if it isn't politically expedient. There's really so much to unpack in today's chapter, and about David's leadership in general. We're not going to be able to reflect on it all here. But if I can finish with this, there's a telling line, an indication that David's rule is not simply at his own will. When David tells Zadok HaKohen to go back with the ark, and if God chooses to restore David as king, David will also return to Yerushalayim. But, V'im ko yomar lo chafatzti bach, hineni yaseh li kasher tov be'anav. And if he should say, I do not want you, I am ready, let him, God, do with me as he pleases. May Am Yisrael only benefit and merit to see this leadership in our lifetime.